to anyone. Understand me?
Yes, ma'am.
Barely audible. Get out of here. The medic fled, leaving Victor alone with the captain. Do you have any excuse for your behavior? Victor thought of the mother and baby he had recovered. But he said, not really. Not really, huh? I heard you picked up something really stomach-turning, is that right? A woman with a baby in her arms. Upsetting. Before he realized he was saying it, Victor revealed, I have a wife and children somewhere out in the belt. He stopped himself. The captain stared at him for a long moment. Then she said, more softly, I have a family, too. I keep them with me. He recognized the sculptured cheekbones, the gold-flecked eyes. The medic? One of my daughters. The other one's an engineer with the flight crew. Is your husband aboard, too? He asked. Never had one. Never wanted one. Cloning works fine. Victor's insides felt hollow, his legs weak. I don't know where my family is now. She seemed to stiffen and drew herself up to her full height, eye to eye with Victor. Well, you're aboard my ship now, and you'll do the work you've signed on to do. No more booze and no more days spent in your bunk. Understand me? Yes, Captain. Report to the infirmary at once. I want you to take a full physical and psych exam. I want you detoxed. Get that alcohol out of your bloodstream. Yes, Captain. Victor turned to leave. At 2000 hours, report back here. He blinked with surprise. Here? To my quarters. 2000 hours. Understand me? Yes, Captain.
Or ship Syracuse, the galley. Pauline Zacharias wondered why they had these meetings in the galley. The family's living quarters included a perfectly comfortable sitting room, but somehow whenever they had something to discuss, the three of them always huddled together over the narrow table of the galley. Like old-time families on Earth, she thought, coming together in the kitchen. Maybe it's instinct. Gather where the food and warmth are centered, where the air smells of cooking, and everybody feels at ease. But Syracuse's galley didn't smell of cooking, except for the brief moments when the cranky old microwave was opened and she was taking a sizzling hot prepackaged meal to the table. The galley wasn't homey and warm. It had no fireplace, no cookpot simmering. Its metal bulkheads and plastic deck tiles were cold and worn. Still, Pauline thought, it's the closest thing to a safe cave that the children know. Children, she thought. They're not children anymore. Angela's old enough to start a family of her own. And Theo, he's aged 5 years in the past 6 months, working night and day to keep this ship's systems going, to keep us alive. Theo was sitting at the head of the little table, Angela on his left. Pauline herself sat with her back to the row of freezers and microwave ovens. She had placed a meager bowl of thawed fruit on the table and a glass of reconstituted juice at each of their three places. Theo was saying, I've been working with the navigation program at night, trying to figure out some way to cut our trip time down and get us back to the Ceres area in less than 8 years. And 7 months, Angela muttered. And 4 days, Theo added, grinning at her. Pauline realized that 6 months ago, he would have lost his temper with his sister. Now he simply let her grumbles roll off his back. Theo's growing up, she thought. All this responsibility is making a man of him. Angela is maturing, too, she realized. She's become a real help to Theo. She can run the command pod systems just as well as he can. Pauline smiled to herself. The idea of Theo and Angela working together on repairing the ship's antennas would have been preposterous 6 months ago. Yet they've slaved away at it together without fighting, without calling each other names. even when it became painfully clear that they wouldn't be able to get the antennas functioning again, they didn't blame each other. Theo blames his father, though. He says Victor didn't store the proper supplies for repairing the antennas. Maybe he's right. None of us expected to be attacked. None of us expected the antennas to be so badly damaged. That was her greatest worry. Not that they were drifting halfway to Jupiter, alone and unable to call for help. Not that they might run out of food or have the recyclers break down past the point where they could be repaired. Pauline's greatest worry was that Theo blamed his father for this. Blamed Victor for not supplying the ship adequately. Blamed him for running away and abandoning them. "We might be able to cut the trip time in half," Theo was saying, "but it's an awfully risky maneuver." With an effort of will, Pauline focused her attention on what her son was telling her. "We put it all on a graph," Theo said, fingering the palm-sized remote in his hand. "We?" Pauline asked. "Angie and me." He hesitated, then admitted, "Angie's a lot better at math than I am." A multicolored map appeared on the smart screen on the galley's far bulkhead. Thin yellow lines looped across its gridwork background. Pauline realized that they were the orbits of major asteroids. A pulsing red dot was at its center. "The red dot is us," Theo explained. "And here's our current trajectory." A blue curve arced outward. The view enlarged to show Syracuse's trajectory soaring out the far side of the asteroid belt, halfway to Jupiter, before it finally swung back toward Ceres again. "I've gone through all the numbers a dozen times." "We both did," Angela said, without a hint of rancor. He dipped his chin in acknowledgement of his sister. "And here's what we might be able to do." A dotted blue curve appeared, much shorter than the solid one. Theo explained, "The NAV program shows that we can get back to Ceres in a little more than 4 years if we fire the main engine and decelerate the ship." 4 years, 2 months, and 16 days, said Angela, looking almost happy about it. "Right, Thee?"
"Right,"
give or take an uncertainty of 5%. "Couldn't we make it less than that?" Pauline asked. Theo grimaced, then answered, "We don't have the fuel for a longer burn, Mom. This maneuver is going to use up our last drop of hydrogen." Pauline thought about that for a moment. "You don't mean all our hydrogen?" "All of it, Mom. Down to the last molecule." "But how will we generate electricity if we use all the fuel? The reactor needs hydrogen." "That's the risky part. We can't run for 4 years without electricity. We couldn't last 4 days." "I know. But we have water."
"Drinking water," Pauline said,
"which we need."
"We recycle it," said Angela.
"But what's our drinking water got to do with hydrogen for the fusion reactor?" Pauline asked. She was fairly certain she knew the answer, but she wanted to hear what Theo had come up with. Theo gnawed on his lip for several heartbeats. With a glance at his sister, he explained, "Here's what Angie and I have figured out. Water contains hydrogen. We electrolyze some of our water and feed the hydrogen to the reactor to keep it going. We use the electricity that the reactor generates to split the water into hydrogen and oxygen," Angela added. Pauline felt confused. "Now wait a second. You use electricity from the reactor to produce hydrogen fuel for the reactor?" They both nodded.
It's a bootstrap operation, I know," said Theo. "But the numbers show that it could work."
Angela said, "The hydrogen fusion produces a gajillion times more energy than it takes to split the water molecules."
"Something about this doesn't sound right to me," Pauline insisted.
"Angela's right, Mom," Theo replied. "The fusion process produces a lot more energy than it takes to electrolyze the water. We'll be on the happy side of the curve."
"You're certain of this?" Pauline asked.
Again, Theo hesitated. Then he said,
"That's what the numbers show."
"Then why can't we produce enough hydrogen to feed the main engine and get us back to Ceres sooner?"
Propulsion needs reaction mass, Mom.